Rows of old film studio buildings reflected in a shiny gold surface. As the surface turns, it's revealed to be the edge of a shield with the letters WB in its center on a blue sky background. Warner Brothers Pictures, a Time Warner company. Shimmering metallic V-shapes of diminishing sizes sit within each other. Light pours from the gaps between them. Village Roadshow Pictures. Bathed in light, a little girl holds her arms out and beams as she's held aloft. In slow, dreamlike motion, the child, wearing a green swimsuit, runs along a beach as waves wash onto the shore. A man stands in the surf, and holding the little girl up, he swings her round and round. Both smiling, the child and man radiate happiness. An attractive woman in her 40s, with short, auburn hair, lies alone in bed asleep. Her face twitches and she smiles. The woman reaches out to a bedside cabinet and switches off the alarm. The woman, Adrienne Willis, turns on her side and opens her eyes. Now dressed, she hurries up a staircase holding a laundry basket.
Amanda!
She gathers discarded clothes as she goes.
Amanda, turn that down! Jeez!
She closes a cupboard and enters the bedroom of her son, Danny, who's playing a computer game.
Danny, are you still on that thing? We've got to go, honey! We gotta get rolling here.
Uh-huh. Did your sister come in here to help you with anything?
Huh?
Sweetie, your father's gonna be here in 5 minutes. Please, get motivated. Get dressed. Amanda! Amanda! I can't even hear myself thinking here.
What?
How can I help you get ready to leave this house in time for your father if you won't help?
You can do it, Mom. I believe in you.
I have a ferry to catch, and I've only got two hands. Count them. One, two.
She can count, too.
That's enough, smart mouth. What is that all in your stomach? Hey, go wash
off. Are these clean?
No, they're not.
Actually,
clean.
I can't wash it off because it's a real tattoo.
What?
Whoa.
You got a real tattoo without asking permission?
Wait till Dad sees.
Shut up. You're an idiot.
You are.
Please, you
just
are.
Just good
one. Get out of my room. Now. Not now. Get out of my room.
Stupid kid.
Adrienne points warningly. A handsome man in his 50s, Dr. Paul Flanner, selects shirts from his wardrobe. He chooses an assortment of other clothes and packs everything into a large leather holdall. Adrienne stands before a mirror, brushes her hands through her hair, quickly checks her roots and chuckles. Richard Gere, Diane Lane, Nights in Rodanthe. Adrienne peers through a window to see a car arrive.
I don't want to go with Dad.
Honey, it's Orlando, Dan. There's lots to do. It'll be fun.
No, it won't.
Okay, so it won't. But you know what? We'll talk every day.
Okay.
You're being so brave.
She hugs the child who wears round wire spectacles.
Amanda, your father's here. You better cover that thing up if you want to deal with your father about it this weekend.
You look tired.
Yeah, sure I do.
Paul picks up a medical Spanish textbook, then a framed photograph of himself with his arm around a teenage boy.
Okay, who wants to have some fun around
Daddy.
Here?
Daddy!
Amanda hugs her father.
Come on, buddy. How you doing? Come on, give me a big hug. Ed.
Adrienne leans on a cabinet. At his home, Paul picks up some crumpled letters and stuffs them into his holdall.
Danny's medicine's in his backpack.
Oh, he takes them every night.
Oh, she's got a report that's due on Monday.
Yeah, she and I talked. Don't worry about it. Look, Aid, between you and me, we got it covered.
Well, I don't know about you, but I've got to get on the road. Shouldn't you be leaving?
Aid, sit down.
Listen, I've got a ferry to catch.
For a minute, please.
Yeah.
Tall, dark-haired Jack slowly approaches his wife in the kitchen and smiles.
I want to come home.
Adrienne frowns.
What?
I don't know how it could have been so stupid. Don't say anything yet. Look, I know any chance you had that you could forgive me.
Forgive
you? Probably right out the window. I know that. Only...
Only what?
All I want now is a chance. I'm not saying that I deserve it.
Please.
I'm just saying I'll try.
Jack, I can't.
I'll try like anything. Adrienne, I love you. I love you so much. I know what I've lost here, Aiden. I'll do anything in my power to get it back.
He crouches before her.
Jack, you can't just walk in here and do this to me out of the blue. I mean, what? Because it didn't work out with what's her name?
We ought to be together. Adrienne, you know that. All you've got to do is look at the children. Come on. Come to Orlando with us.
What?
We'll put put the kids on the dumb rides and give us time to be alone. That's all we need.
Oh, Jeff, I can't.
I told Jean that I would help her, you know, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do what I said I would do.
Okay. When I get back, we'll talk.
Yeah, okay. We'll talk when you get back. Jeff, okay, we'll talk then.
The two kids watch them through the open front door. At Paul's, items of furniture are covered with dust sheets. Paul picks up keys from a hall table. Carrying his holdall, he steps up to the front door. He turns and looks about with resignation, then opens the door.
Oh, Dr. Flanner, I thought we'd missed you.
No, I tell them I hope they're happy here.
He hands the keys to the woman on the doorstep and gives a cursory glance to a couple standing close by. He leaves the opulent, pillared red brick house in a silver Jaguar XK8. He drives along a tree-lined road through an upmarket, leafy suburb. He spots a man pushing a child on a tire suspended from a tree and stares as he passes. He drives along a highway away from a city skyline which looms behind him. A billboard reads, "I got my crabs from Dirty Dick's Crab House." People step through the gaping mouth of a huge shark and enter a shopping mall. Paul drives along a highway which spans a vast stretch of water. Boats are neatly lined up in a marina. A car ferry cuts through the water. Paul's on board.
River's up and I can't get across. River's up and I can't get across. River's up and I can't get across. Down in North Carolina. Waterbound.
Hands in his pockets, Paul strolls across the deck. Seabirds swirl overhead and a fishing trawler passes. Paul is momentarily distracted by children rushing past him before he turns his attention to the churning white foam left in the trail of the ferry. Pensive, he stares glumly down into the water. An unspoiled sandy coastline, a car travels along a road beside it. Based on the novel by Nicholas Sparks, screenplay by Anne Peacock and John Romano, produced by Denise Danovi, directed by George C. Wolfe. It's Paul's car. He drives alone along the coast. Adrian's in a quaint bedroom, packing a suitcase.
You remember where I keep the extra towels and extra sheets?
I know where everything is. I'll be fine.
And how you have to wait for the hot water to burble up at you.
You reminded me twice.
Oh, and I got an emergency generator just in case the storm turns into anything and you lose power. But it's never been turned on before, though, so I wouldn't count on it working.
If it gets stuck, kick it hard.
And that goes for most things around here.
Jack wants to come back.
Her friend stares at her.
Uh-huh. I wouldn't worry about the storm, though. Weatherman's always predicting that.
Jean, what do you think?
I think I'm not going to say anything, because if I do, and you say you're going to let him come back to you, you going to let him come back?
I don't know.
Uh-huh. The storm boards are underneath the house. They hook into place. You'll figure
I'll
it
figure
out.
Figure it all out.
Now, if they issue a warning, just go on and get out of here. But this place has been through so many hurricanes, I wouldn't even worry about it. Won't feel a thing.
She pours herself a drink.
So what happened? Jack get tired of that Miss Flip Curly was reptiling around with behind your back, your best friend?
She was not my friend. She was in my carpool. You're my best friend.
Don't play me.
She sits by Adrian.
What? And the kids want things back to normal, you know?
Doing it for the children, huh? Which reminds me, when are you going to send me Miss Amanda so I can out-attitude her attitude and send her home right?
I wish you would.
Where was that man? Where was Jack when your father died? Your father who was so good to him, too.
Adrian stands up.
Anyway, when do the guests arrive?
Guests, meaning one, tonight. I thought about closing this place down, but when a man calls from Raleigh and he offers to pay double the price and it's off-season, as my grandmama used to say, count your blessings and keep on stepping, which is exactly what you need to do when it comes to reptile Jack. You should have married that hippie Potter with the great ass back in school. Hell, I should have married the hippie Potter with the great ass. Love you.
Be safe. Have fun for the both of us.
Have fun yourself.
Jean takes her suitcase from Adrian and goes. Adrian leans back against the front door. Sand sweeps from dunes across the coast road. Headlights on, Paul squints as he tries to peer through the golden grainy mist swirling across the windscreen. It clears as he drives up alongside a tall, rambling clapboard house on stilts right on the beach. The Inn at Rodanthe. The inn is dark and quirky. It has many gables and has many different levels, a small octagonal tower and a larger square tower. Blue shutters act like canopies and windbreakers over the many windows. Sun loungers and chairs are dotted about a veranda which encircles the entire first floor of the house. Little balconies with white rails adorn the top two floors. A staircase leads from the veranda onto the beach, where waves fold over the last couple of steps. A second staircase leads under an awning to the front door. Paul goes inside and looks about. He enters a red hall, then steps through a doorway to a reception desk, which is deserted.
Hello?
He looks around and sets his bag down. He pushes open swing doors with ornamental latticework into a cluttered, pale green kitchen, then steps back out again. He parts a shell curtain and steps through it, looking around.
Anybody here?
He peers into a room, then heads towards a billowing curtain and open doors which lead onto the veranda.
Hello?
Adrian turns and sees him.
You must be Mr. Flanner.
Yeah, I am.
The wind just came up.
Wearing a shawl and standing facing the sea, she hurriedly wipes her eyes.
Get you signed in. You must have taken the 3:30 ferry. You're early.
Yeah, I did.
A register.
4 nights, leaving Tuesday?
Pretty early. I've got a flight to catch.
If you don't mind signing this, please. Yeah, you may have heard some talk about bad weather. Radio said only 50% chance, though.
Yeah, I heard something about that. Doesn't matter.
Well, people come here even in winter for the beach, you know.
Doesn't matter.
Oh, if you don't mind, please fill out the home address. Jean always asks for home address.
Thought you were Jean.
Oh, Jean and I are old friends. She had to work in Miami, so I'm standing in for her.
She watches him sign his name. He looks up.
Look, I'm gonna leave his home address blank, if you don't mind.
Okay. Okay.
Adrian opens the door to his room, and Paul brushes past her.
Sorry.
It's all right.
It has deep blue walls and a balcony.
It's called the Blue Room.
Paul nods.
Oh, the hot water. You may have to give it a little time to burble up at you. If you need any extra blankets, towels, anything, don't hesitate to ask. After all, you are the only guest. If you're lucky, you'll see bankers. That's the wild ponies that were descendants of the horses that were shipwrecked here hundreds of years ago. They swam miles to shore. Well, dinner's at 8 or 7, 7:30 if you defer, whatever time you'd like, because you are the...
I'm the only guest. 7:30's great.
Yes. Can I get you anything else?
No, I think I got everything. Thank you.
Thank you.
Paul steps to the balcony door which Adrian had opened and closes it firmly. He peers out with a surly expression at a telescope which points towards the ocean. In the kitchen, Adrian takes a pan and switches on a radio. She tips out a paper bag into the pan and washes the contents. She glances at a clock. It's 6:05. As she puts some groceries in the refrigerator, she spots a photo pinned to the fridge door of herself with the kids on a beach and takes it down. A portion of the photo has been folded back. She unfolds it to reveal Jack.
Oh, Jean.
She props the photo on a cupboard door. Now in a striped apron, she prepares dinner. Adrian places a vase of lilies on the reception desk and ties back the shell curtain. She strolls to a window and sees Paul outside pacing across the beach, talking on his mobile.
I don't know, I don't care, I just want it there, I want it. I want the equipment there when I arrive, that's the whole point, I want it when I arrive.
Adrian removes the dish from the oven. Paul is tall and striking, and has thick, swept back grey hair. He strolls into a dimly lit dining room, A place setting has been laid for him on a small, polished table by the closed veranda doors. A vase of lilies adorns the table. Paul tosses his jacket down and takes his seat. In the kitchen, Adrian does up a button on her white blouse. Looking prim in a modest black skirt, she carries a bread basket through into the dining room and sets it on Paul's table. She picks up a bottle of red wine and proceeds to pour him a glass.
Unless you'd prefer white.
No, no, red is fine, it's good.
I'll come back with your salad.
She leaves him. Paul picks up his napkin and places it across his lap. He closes his eyes and inhales. His reflection is caught in the glass of the veranda door. He stares out, lost in thought. The white strip of a breaking wave cuts through the darkness outside. In the kitchen, Adrian dresses a salad with a vinaigrette and tosses it. Suddenly, Paul pushes the swing door open and steps in.
Dinah Washington. She's so great.
Adrian nods and continues to toss the salad. Paul places his glass of wine down beside her and steps out. A baffled Adrian looks at the glass. Paul re-enters with his dinner plate and sits down at the kitchen table.
Something wrong with your table?
Absolutely not. I didn't want to eat alone.
Adrian composes herself.
Oh. Okay. Here's your salad.
Thank you.
She takes his plate and serves dinner.
Hungry.
It's probably the air.
What?
Makes you hungry. I've been coming here for years with my husband Jack and the kids. But just the kids lately.
Yeah, well, I never got home for dinner either.
Oh, Jack made it home for dinner, all right. When he was there.
Thank you.
We might be getting back together. I'm sorry, it's weird not knowing if you're married or not.
It's all right. I don't know where I live.
He smiles up at her. Adrian sets a plate down at the other end of the table and sits down.
Well, you didn't come here for the beach.
He looks up and meets her gaze.
No, I came here to talk to somebody.
Adrian nods. Paul looks away.
More wine?
Yeah, sure.
As she fills his glass, Paul gets up and opens a cupboard.
Oh, can I?
You don't have any?
No. Well, wait, why not?
He passes her a wine glass and she fills it.
So if you're not Jean, who are you?
No, I'm sorry. I'm Adrian Willis.
Adrian
Taylor. I was Adrian Taylor, and...
Adrian.
He raises his glass to her.
Well, do you have kids?
Yeah, I have a son. He's a doctor.
Really? Well, you must have done something, right?
Yeah, well, not me. My wife. Ex-wife. Can't take any credit.
He looks down. Adrian nods. After a while, he looks up and smiles. Adrian smiles back. Paul stares out at a pale orange glow over the dark ocean. Adrian hands him some pie.
Oh, that's great, thank you. What is that?
That glow?
Yeah.
It's called Teach's Light. Captain Teach, the pirate, swore he'd put his enemies to an everlasting fire. That glow's supposed to be their bodies burning. It's not considered a good omen.
Thanks for warning me.
She smiles.
It's from a folk tale my dad used to tell me. He loved telling stories. And he had a beautiful eye. It's because of him that I went to art school.
So you're an artist?
I used to be.
She shrugs.
Died a few months ago.
I'm sorry.
That's just been my year, you know. Dad died, and my husband, and my daughter decided she hated me. I don't know why I thought things were going to get easier.
Yeah, we all did.
Paul smiles and looks up at her. Adrian nods. Adrian tosses her shawl around her neck.
I think I'm going to go in now.
He gets up.
I think I'll go for a walk.
Okay.
They nod at each other.
Good night.
Night.
And go their separate ways. Paul turns on the taps at a sink in his bedroom. A few droplets of water trickle out. He turns them another rotation and waits. Downstairs, Adrian switches off some lights while on the phone.
Danny's still up? I told him that we'd talk every night. Aw, well, don't wake him. Did he do his inhaler before he fell asleep? Jack, I told you. You're going to have to go in there, wake him up, and give him his medicine.
Water suddenly gushes from one of the bedroom taps, then stops. Adrian heads upstairs.
Yes, I have been thinking about it. Of course I've been thinking about it. I'm not ready to talk about it.
Paul unfolds a map.
Jack, please, let's have that conversation when I get back, like I said. Can I just say goodnight to Amanda?
Okay.
Paul holds the phone out to Amanda, who's wearing headphones. She mouths no.
Age is out, iPod on and everything, she's asleep.
Really? Well, please let Miss Amanda know that I know she's not asleep and that I love her very, very much.
Ada, I love you. I love you.
Let's just say goodnight, okay? Goodnight.
She hangs up. Paul reads the medical Spanish textbook. Lying on his bed, he looks at his bedside table and picks up a framed photograph lying there. He studies the photo. In a hospital corridor.
Dad. What happened? Are you okay?
We're doctors. Can't control everything all the time.
I'm asking if you're all right.
This is my last surgery. I don't have time for this.
At home with his wife. She stands up. Paul gets up and steps towards her. She strokes his cheek and leaves, pulling some luggage behind her. In the hospital locker room, his son has changed out of his medical doctor's uniform.
Look, your mother and I, we're worried about you. We just want to make sure that you're safe, that's all.
Since when? Since when is my mother and you? Since when is it we?
All right, okay. That's not why I'm here.
Why the hell are you here?
He leaves.
Mark?
In his bedroom at the inn, Paul looks in a soulful mood. He gets up and walks around the bed and out onto the balcony. Downstairs, Adrian moves through the shadowy dining room. Wearing a warm cardigan, she raises its collar and steps onto the veranda below Paul's. She stands at the balustrade and gazes out over the dark ocean. Below her, waves fold and wash towards the inn. Dawn. Dressed in a hooded sweat top, Paul descends the steps from his balcony to the beach. He begins to jog, then race along it. He walks along a hospital corridor accompanied by a team of people.
Any problems with anesthesia?
No problems.
Absolutely not. You sure? Yes.
Miles Davis again, Dr. Flanner?
Bach today, Bach.
He's in theater preparing a patient's face for surgery. Bright overhead lights blaze behind him. Paul races along the beach. The patient's heartbeat flatlines.
Charging. Talk to me! Come on now!
As Paul pumps his patient's chest, he looks over his shoulder and sees Mark watching anxiously. Paul jogs along a path in bright sunlight. He has flashbacks of his patient. He passes a clapboard house and stares at the number 18 etched on a post beside the door. The inn.
Good
morning. Coffee's ready. Can I make you something for breakfast?
Maybe later. I gotta go into town.
Adrian watches him hurry out with surprise. She enters his bedroom with a stack of clean white towels and a basket of cleaning materials. She sets them down, picks up the hooded sweat top from the floor and hangs it on a hook on the back of the door. She picks up two striped cushions from a chair, straightens the bed cover, and props the cushions against the pillows. She catches sight of the framed photograph of Paul and the teenage boy on the bedside table. She picks it up and studies it. She puts it back down. She's about to move away, then a little surreptitiously picks up the Spanish medical textbook and pulls out an envelope protruding from it. The envelope's addressed to Paul Flanner, M.D., Triangle Center for Plastic Surgery, from R. Torrelson, 18 William Etheridge Drive, Rodanthe, North Carolina. Paul drives up to the shabby clapboard house with number 18 etched by the door and gets out.
Looking for someone?
Yeah. This Robert Torrelson's house?
Yeah, that's my father. You with the bank?
No, I'm Paul Flanner. Is he in?
Robert's surly son, Charlie, removes his baseball cap.
What the hell do you want? Coming here.
Well, your father wrote me a letter, said he wanted to talk.
Get back in your car and go on out of here.
I told you, he wrote me.
And
I'm
I told
here.
You to leave. Nobody here has nothing to say to you. What do you think? They can just show up, talk your way out of it. Now get.
Frustrated, Paul sighs and turns to go.
I'm staying at the inn. You can let him know.
I ain't telling you again.
Let him know.
He gets in his car. Charlie suddenly rushes at the car and kicks it. Paul brakes and makes to get out. He hesitates and looks at Charlie's bitter expression in the wing mirror, then drives on. He arrives back at the inn and gets out to look at his damaged car. Adrian holds a pile of storm boards.
Son of a bitch.
What happened?
Where are you taking these?
I'm taking them to the top of the stairs. They're for the windows. I can do this.
I got it.
Sure?
Yeah. He drops them.
It's all right.
Okay.
Here, let me do it. I've got gloves on. I can...
Let me do this.
Okay. I should go into town and get some supplies.
Paul picks up the pile of blue stormboards. Adrian frowns as she walks to her car. She glances back at Paul to see him hurry up the steps with the boards. He turns to watch her drive away. At Joe Bob's trading post.
All right, y'all take care. Adrian.
Doc.
Adrian Willis.
How are you?
Half out of my mind, that's how I am. Getting folks stocked up in case the storm blows in.
You better get ready, because it's going to hit hard.
They say it's a-coming, and it don't. They say it ain't, and it does. I'm not used to seeing you so late in the year.
I'm looking after things for Gene.
Don't tell me you've still got guests at the inn.
Look out, because it's going to happen.
I know exactly how many cold buds I got back there.
The old guy closes the beer fridge.
Hey, Doc, did you hear anything about this family, the Torrelsons?
Well, there's only Robert and their son, Charlie, left. You know what happened to poor Jill.
I heard something.
They saved all their pennies for some famous doctor from Raleigh. I told her not to do it. I warned her. God rest her soul. You want some candles?
Paul's on his phone.
Yeah, look, I want to get out of here. Yeah, as soon as I can.
He looks up to see that Adrian has returned with supplies.
Call me back.
So you're leaving early?
Yeah, I'm trying to. I'm thinking about it. Look, I'm sorry. I was a little spun out before.
Does it have anything to do with the, Torrelsons? I'm sorry, it's a small town.
What exactly did you hear?
Look, you don't owe me any explanation.
No, I don't. What did you hear? Huh? You want to hear the truth?
Adrian unpacks the groceries in the kitchen. Paul stands in the doorway.
Mrs. Torrelson came to me with a hemangioma. A cyst on her left cheek. Benign, but substantial. It was disfiguring, that was all. It wasn't life-threatening. I have removed cysts this bad and worse, much worse, hundreds of times. Nothing's ever gone wrong. She died on the table.
He nods and looks away.
The husband, filed a suit for wrongful death. And then he wrote me a note and he said, want to talk? I thought, sure. Fine, one conversation, I'll clear this whole thing up. When I get to the house, the son won't even let me see him. Kicks in my car!
Must have been very hurtful.
He was angry.
I meant for you. To be held responsible for the death of a mother.
Paul looks away. He licks his lips and shifts about uneasily, then looks up at Adrian.
Look, if me being here makes you feel uncomfortable, I can go.
Surprised, Adrian shakes her head.
I was planning on grilling a salmon for dinner.
She looks at him hopefully and smiles. Paul nods. He looks away, smiles, then looks up and nods again.
Sounds good.
On the beach.
Oh, Jean, don't worry so much. Whatever I didn't find in the inn, I bought downtown. We're gonna be just fine.
Whoa, 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 wee.
Jean's on a bed in a spa.
Don't start with me. I didn't mean anything by we, all right? Dr. Flanner and I.
Doctor, is it?
Listen to me. I'm not going to do this with you.
So now we know he's rich.
But is he good looking?
I am not having this conversation with you.
That good looking, huh?
I didn't say that. You know I didn't say that.
Oh, come on. Tell me my great-grandmama's place is doing you some good. It is, isn't it? It is. You can tell me.
Don't you have something important you're supposed to be doing, like meeting with dealers and showing them your work?
I am meeting and I am showing.
Le bureau s'est fermé, n'est-ce pas? On a des autres affaires maintenant.
Jean's half-naked lover kisses her seductively to Adrian.
I am giving all I've got.
Adrian hangs up.
God.
Sitting on the beach with the wind blowing through her hair, she looks up at the inn. Evening. She shares a table with Paul and shows him photos.
This is Miss Amanda.
Oh.
Before and after. You see the whole story there now? She is really something else. Whatever she thinks or feels, she will let you know. She's like her dad, like that. You don't have to second guess her. But I do admire her for her honesty. Really, I do. I don't think there's much she admires about me lately. But that's fine. And this is my Danny.
She passes him a photo.
Oh. Look at him. Is he about 9?
10. He's always in his own world. I think when he grows up, he's going to be a writer. Or a philosopher, or do something really special with all of that solitude.
You light up when you talk about him. Thanks. Both your kids.
I saw a picture of you with a little boy. Must be your son.
Mark? He's 28 now. Believe that? Oh, my God. Yeah, he's,
He's a doctor like his dad.
Well, I don't think he'd see it quite like that, but he heads a clinic in Ecuador up in the mountains.
Wow. He must be doing some important work.
Yeah. I tend to think he's hiding down there, probably from me.
Stop. Well, when was the last time you spoke?
It's been almost a year now.
Adrian raises her brows.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I just can't imagine that. I mean, Amanda drives me crazy, but I'm not talking for a year.
Paul meets her gaze.
He was there when the woman died. Yeah, I sent the surgery nurse out there. Tell the husband, which in retrospect probably wasn't the smartest thing to do, but I had 4 operations that morning already, and I had another patient waiting in the next OR. I feel like me going out there standing around the husband was not going to bring his wife back. Mark did not approve. I'm sure he felt it was just another example of me making the wrong decision. Bad doctor, bad father, bad, 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 bad. Anyway, in a month he was gone.
They sip some wine.
Yeah, I've been leaning on a pharmaceutical company to send drugs and medical equipment down there. I'm going down there for 2 weeks. I'm gonna bring it back.
Adrian nods.
Must be something in this wine. I am just blah, blah.
No.
I'm sorry, really sorry.
It's stop.
He leans back in his chair and smiles. The table has been formally set with white tablecloth, lilies and candles.
I'd like for you to come with me.
She stands up and steps away. Paul watches her.
Okay.
He rises, picks up his glass of wine and follows her out of the dining room. Adrian leads Paul up a staircase.
All right, where are you taking me?
She steps aside and gestures for Paul to walk on. He steps up into a dark room filled with artifacts. Adrian switches on a light. Vibrant paintings and canvases cover the walls. Books and paint pots cover surfaces. An old photo of a young, attractive African-American woman is surrounded by mementos.
Jean had a great-grandmother. Came here right after the Civil War. You're surrounded by the spirit guides that she taught Jean about. That's Yeminja.
A painting of a woman rising out of a wave. Paul looks at the painting of a beautiful, free-spirited woman.
This is you, isn't it?
I was in my 20s. God of Thunder?
Not a happy guy tonight.
Oh, there's Amanda. With Jean. Jean's our godmother.
Oh, she's adorable.
Adrian unpins the photo of Jean cradling baby Amanda.
Sweet. I made that.
This?
Yeah.
You made this?
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Years ago, from Driftwood. Something I learned from the local women.
It's a small box.
They use them for special things that they loved and wanted to keep safe. The more scarred and twisted the wood, the better, because then if you could make something beautiful out of it, it meant that much more.
Paul takes out a pendant.
What would you keep in yours?
Adrian smiles and considers.
My children. Jean. And memories of my father.
Who keeps you safe?
He looks at her with a gentle smile. Adrian's eyes widen. She shakes her head.
Well, you fall in love with someone, you know, and you make a family, and you become what you think you're supposed to be. And,
she bows her head, frowns, then smiles resignedly.
Change and you give up certain things. Then they look at what you got left and you wish you... I don't know, you just think maybe you shouldn't have.
Don't?
He shrugs.
Just don't do it anymore.
He gazes into her eyes with a soft smile. Adrian looks down and meets his gaze and smiles shyly. Paul takes a step towards her.
Sorry, I forgot it was even...
She takes her phone out.
Oh, it's Amanda.
Oh.
Hi, sweetheart. I knew you were going to have a good time. That's great, sweetie. I'm looking at a baby picture of you right now. How's Danny?
Paul picks up his wine glass.
Good. That's great.
Paul gestures downstairs.
That's great, honey.
Paul slips away.
Yes, I am thinking about what your daddy asked me. That's right. Thinking about it, sweetheart. That's what I said.
Paul pauses and listens.
Amanda. Amanda. Listen to me, honey. That's something that your father and I are deciding. It's complicated, sweetheart. We have to talk about it.
There isn't anything to talk about, okay?
I promised? What did he tell you, honey?
You said you would give him a chance. You know, you're only thinking about what you want, and it's really not fair to us.
Amanda, put your father on the phone, please. Now.
Call me a mama's boy!
So, Ed, I hear you're gonna have some bad weather.
Did you tell Amanda that I promised you something?
Don't get mad at Mandy. She just got a little ahead of herself because she wants things to work out.
I can't believe how irresponsible you're being. You dragged the children into a conversation that you and I haven't even had yet. You know what? No, I covered your ass with those kids when you left me. I don't even deserve a weekend here alone to think by myself after you've pulled a 180 on me. You say you love me and that you want to come back to me, and what am I supposed to do? Just pretend that the last 7 months didn't even happen?
She strides into the dining room.
You okay?
Adrian holds her hand up, gesturing wait. She goes to a cupboard and opens it. She searches through a shelf of record albums and selects one. Paul sits at their table holding his glass of wine and watches her. Adrian puts the record onto a turntable on the shelf beneath and carefully lifts the needle onto it. As the record plays, Adrian's body sways. She sweeps her hair back and succumbs to the music. Paul smiles. Give me good kisses like that. Adrian clicks her fingers. Adrian nods her head and gyrates to the music. Paul nods and grins.
I think I'm going to have a drink. How about a shot? Would you like to have a shot?
She walks out.
Yeah, I'd like a shot.
He sets his wine glass down and follows her to the kitchen, where Adrian uncorks a bottle. She takes two shot glasses from a cupboard and pours.
Oh.
Paul steps closer and picks up a glass.
You know, thing about this music?
No, what?
Adrian knocks her drink back, winces, and pours another.
The thing about this music is the same thing about this whiskey.
Cheers.
Adrian knocks her second shot back, grimaces, and swallows.
I forget.
I love Jean, but she buys all this canned food in case of a hurricane or something, and she never eats it. She keeps it forever.
She takes a tin from a cupboard.
1996. 96? That's Hurricane Bertha.
She tosses it into a bin.
Spam! Who eats lard?
Lard. You know what lard does to your arteries? Do you understand?
Please.
She gestures to the bin and pours another whiskey. Paul bins the can of lard.
I have always wanted to clean Jean's pantry. Succotash. Thank you.
Swish!
Vienna sausage.
In a can? In a can? Yes!
Here comes the wind-up.
Watch out. Okay, come
Not
on.
Not
the mound. The last game.
Smoke and shots.
The crowd is on their feet.
Get away!
Wait a minute. Wait. He wins! He wins! The crowd goes wild. Yes!
Yeah.
What an arm you got there, Tiger.
When I was a kid, Barbie's head was the ball and her body was the bat.
More whiskey. It's dark outside as Adrian and Paul help themselves to cans from Jean's cupboard and take turns tossing them into the kitchen bin. The whiskey bottle's empty. Adrian holds up her hand.
Okay.
To go to bed. I have to go to bed. I have to go.
She goes.
Good night.
Alone, Paul smiles and skillfully tosses another can in the bin. The sky hangs grey over the inn and the sea is rough. Adrian brings a chair in from a balcony.
Easy with the door, Tiger.
Oh, thank you.
How are you feeling?
Well, after 5 out-of-date aspirin, I'm a little better. You?
Yeah, I ran it off. Sort of.
I put Jean's cans back.
Even the succotash?
Listen, it's official. The Coast Guard has issued a hurricane warning. I mean, if you're going back to the mainland, you should probably get started.
Well, I couldn't get an earlier flight anyway, so... What about you? You going back?
I can't. I told Jean I'd look after the place.
She notices a pickup truck turn off the road and drive towards the inn. Paul follows her gaze and walks out through the swing door onto the balcony. He descends steps to a lower balcony as the truck pulls up. Charlie Torlson sits in the driver's seat. A lean, frail man in his 60s gets out and approaches the inn. The elderly man locks eyes with Paul.
Dr. Flanner, I'm Robert Torlson. I believe you met my son, Charlie.
Charlie opens his door.
Get down off your hoy horse and say hello to these people. You have a minute to talk, Doctor.
Sure.
Won't you come inside, Mr. Torrelson?
I'm all right here.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Paul descends more steps to stand before Robert.
I want to know what went wrong.
Your wife, Mr. Torrelson, what happened to her? It happens in 1 out of 50,000 cases. They react to the anesthesia.
1 out of 50,000.
Yeah, I've spent, I can't tell you how many hours breaking down the surgery. There's no one to blame. You'll never convince the jury otherwise.
Is that what your lawyers told you to say?
Actually, my lawyers told me not to come.
You come anyway. I guess that makes you some kind of great man. Can I ask you something, Doctor?
He steps up close to Paul.
You know what color my wife's eyes were?
He narrows his eyes and waits for Paul to answer. Standing on the balcony, Adrian bows her head.
My wife is dead. My wife is dead. We were married for 43 years.
He looks at Paul, who doesn't respond. Robert turns and walks back to the pickup. Paul casts his eyes down. The pickup backs onto the road. As Paul ascends the steps to the balcony, he looks up to see Adrian staring at him.
What?
She shakes her head, turns and hurries up the steps, then proceeds hammering storm boards in place over the blue shutters.
What?
It's all right. I'll do it. I got this.
You got something to say? Say it.
The man is in mourning. He lost his wife. I know a little about mourning, okay?
Okay.
Do you have any idea how much courage it took that man to come here? Just to see you?
I'm the one who drove 200 miles to see him.
And then what? Not for 1 minute did you show him that you knew he'd lost anything precious. You defended yourself.
Of course I defended myself. The guy's got a lawsuit against me.
Is that how you plan on handling things when you go visit your son?
What's my son got to do with this?
You know, protect yourself. Defend yourself. Never mind. You don't get it.
No, you don't get it. You don't get it, and Torrelson does not get it. I kept going over and over this operation. Over 1,000 times I went over this, thinking that maybe I'd made a mistake. That I wasn't as good as I need to be. Because I made a decision a long time ago to be the best doctor that I could be. Not the best husband, maybe, best father, the best doctor. And the only thing that really matters to me is I did everything I could to save that woman's life. And that's what I came here to explain to him.
He didn't want an explanation, Paul.
What did he want from me?
You have to realize that you are part of the worst thing that will ever happen to him. He's still in that hospital room, waiting for you to come out and just look him in the eye. What are you so afraid of?
She turns away.
What are you so afraid of? How long have you been married?
What does that have to do with anything?
Can you even remember who you really are anymore? It's all about choices, Adrian. You make choices. You chose that life. You chose that man.
Adrian shakes her head.
Now you're going back to it, right?
Just stop it. Just...
She storms off. A metal pointer on a weather vane springs into action. Rain lashes down and waves crash onto the shore. Adrian pulls a door closed and bolts it. Paul retreats indoors. They both secure shutters and close windows. A chandelier swings wildly. Adrian checks her mobile phone, then closes it. She tries the landline. She hangs up. She starts and looks round to see shutters beating against a window. Paul rushes into his bedroom. The sliding door to his balcony is open. Elsewhere, Adrian struggles to fasten the shutter. Paul runs to the balcony and with great effort pulls the shutter to, then closes the door. He steps back into his room and removes his hooded sweat top. In her room, Adrian sits on the bed and removes her jacket. Paul mops his face with a towel. Adrian peels off a wet t-shirt. Adrian looks round fearfully. The inn is plunged into semi-darkness. In his room, Paul looks about. Adrian tries to switch on a table lamp. A shutters wrenched open by the wind. Adrienne spins round, then crawls across her bed on all fours and grabs a torch from a bedside table. She flicks it on and gets up. She pulls a top on over her head. Paul leaves his bedroom. Adrienne hurries down the winding staircase.
Adrienne!
Paul opens a door. Adrienne opens another door. She shines her torch on a generator. Paul's eyes dart round Adrienne's bedroom. A bracelet from an upturned jewelry box rolls towards him. Adrienne pulls at the generator, then kicks it. Paul hears the banging and leaves the room. The canvases of the spirit guides are momentarily illuminated by lightning flashes. Holding a lit candle, Adrienne makes her way into the dining room. She places the candle on a mantelpiece. Paul steps through the hallway. Adrienne nervously creeps past the shaking veranda doors. Through the shell curtain, Paul sees Adrienne standing in front of a huge swaying display cabinet. He dashes in and pulls her aside as the cabinet crashes to the floor. Terrified, Adrienne and Paul sit up and glance about. They look at each other. Adrienne snuggles up to him and rests her hand on his shoulder. Paul strokes her back, then puts his other arm around her. They turn to gaze intensely at each other. They draw closer until their foreheads are almost touching. Adrienne tilts her head and her mouth meets Paul's for a hungry, passionate kiss. They part, only to reunite with wild abandon and a more fervent passion. The stormy sea sweeps round the ghostly inn, which is silhouetted against the dark grey sky. Paul wakes and lifts his head. He's alone, lying under a quilted cover on a sofa bed by a window. He looks out between the slatted shutters, squinting in the light. He sits up. He walks to a swing door and pushes it open, stepping out onto a balcony. The sea is calm, and gentle waves wash towards the shore. Paul walks between tufts of grass on the sandy ground, which is littered with debris from the storm. He pauses.
Adrienne!
He looks about, then walks on, heading towards bushland.
Adrienne!
Adrienne, in jeans and a light sweater, wraps her arms around herself and shivers. She wanders slowly on, past a section of a white picket fence and various items of furniture strewn about by the storm. She picks up a skateboard and runs her fingers over it sadly. Paul walks on close to the shore and finds Adrienne sitting on some driftwood staring out to sea.
Hey, all right?
Yeah.
She nods and looks away, then turns to him suddenly.
Did you hear the phone ring early this morning?
No.
Daddy had an asthma attack and Jack took him to the hospital.
Paul sits beside her and holds her arm.
Is he all right?
Yeah. It's just that this is the first time that anything like this has happened and I wasn't there.
My son was lying in a hospital bed. And where was I?
The lines were down. You shouldn't blame yourself.
God. Well, I do blame myself. I mean, there was one thing that I thought I got right in this life. It's being a good mother. I can't just do whatever I want to, whenever I want to, you know? Maybe that works for you, but it doesn't work for me. I'm sorry, I can't.
She gets up and walks off. Paul remains seated, thoughtful. He looks out to sea. Adrienne enters her bedroom and switches on a light. Paul enters his bedroom and sits right in an upturned chair. Adrienne's in the art room at the top of the house. She picks up a sketch and a canvas from the floor.
Hmm.
Paul unbolts his shutters, pushes them open and stands in the light. Adrian sweeps up shattered glass from the display cabinet off the dining room floor. Paul steps in slowly and watches her. She looks up. He picks up a couple of books from the floor, glances at them, then looks meekly at Adrian.
I know you're hurting. I guess you weren't there with your son last night.
She looks at the floor.
But I want you to know that I envy what you have. Your kids are very fortunate to have someone who loves them as much as you do. Someone who tries so hard. And any man is a fool who doesn't know how incredibly lucky he is to have you.
She looks at him. Paul places the books on a chair and walks out. He goes to his car.
Paul! Wait!
Adrian hurries after him. He pauses. They share a look, and he smiles, then opens the driver's door and gets in. Adrian gets in the passenger side. Paul reverses. Robert Torlson watches Paul and Adrian standing on the doorstep as he steps up slowly to his swing door. Slightly built, with a worn, sad face, he pushes open the door. Sitting opposite Paul, Robert hands him a framed photograph of an attractive, smiling woman.
Her eyes were dark brown and soft, like she never hurt a soul. She wouldn't either. I knew Jill since we was in school. That thing on her face, she always had it. I didn't care about it. I never even saw it. But she wanted it off. I'd find her in the bathroom, crying, looking at it.
Adrian sits waiting on the porch.
She'd be saying, I want to be pretty for you. It broke my heart when she said that. Because she was pretty. She was so... But that's what she wanted. She wanted the operation. And in our whole life, I don't remember her asking for anything. So I said yes. That was how we come to you.
Eyes downcast. Paul nods and sighs deeply.
I want to thank you for showing this to me.
He hands the photograph back to Robert.
You were the last person she saw or spoke to on this earth. She had all the love and kindness in the world right inside her. You didn't know who you were seeing. And now you do.
Paul's head is bowed.
Mr. Torlson.
He wipes his nose and looks up to meet Robert's intense gaze.
I'm sorry.
He shakes his head.
I'm so very sorry.
Robert stares at him steadily through sad, dark eyes. Charlie sits on a step outside the weather-beaten house, gazing into the distance. On the other side of the swing door, Adrian sits on the porch, waiting. Later, Paul and Adrian stroll along the beach together.
I'm glad I was there.
He looks at her.
Me too.
Adrian smiles. Paul puts his arm around her and rubs her arm. She leans her head on his shoulder. They pause and kiss. He cups her face and strokes her cheeks, then rests his forehead against hers. He lifts his head and looks around.
Maybe today's the day you're going to see those ponies.
The bankers?
Yeah.
Okay, honestly, they don't come this far down the island ever. But thank you.
You'll see. One day they will.
Really?
Yeah.
They walk on.
Thank you.
With her arm around him, they walk amongst golden sand dunes that stretch for miles. In the distance, white waves roll towards the shore. They stroll through the surf. Chatting, Paul ruffles Adrian's hair. She laughs. Paul rests his arm around her neck and kisses the top of her head. Light bulbs are screwed into a string of overhanging lights. Adrian showered and wrapped in a towel. She selects a dress from a wardrobe.
Well, another big one came and went, and just like Rodanthe Pier, we took a few knocks, but we're still standing. So come on down for a Rodanthe-style crab crack celebration tonight.
Wow. Adrian wears a blue cocktail dress. Fish are barbecued. Crab claws are cracked open, the white meat served on a cracker. Illuminated by strings of lights, the beach party's in full swing. The crowd dances as the band plays. An old geezer asks Adrian to dance. Paul raises a bottle of beer to her and laughs as the old guy pulls Adrian out to dance. Dot.
He is great. I'm telling.
Adrian sparkles as she dances. She laughs back at Paul, whose eyes are fixed on her. Then she touches the face of her grizzled dancing partner.
Thank you.
She holds her hand out to Paul, who rises.
Oh, come on.
Hey, there's more food.
Oh, thanks. Just get it, babe. Ain't nobody there
but. Hand in hand, Paul and Adrian stroll towards the end of a jetty. Her pale blue-grey dress flutters in the wind. Paul wears a pale, smart, casual jacket and trousers, and open-necked white shirt. They turn to face each other.
I thought I had seen pretty girls in my time. That was before I met you.
As an old guy sings with the band, Paul, whose arms are folded around Adrian, sways gently with her. Another old-timer plays a fiddle. Paul and Adrian gaze into one another's eyes. He strokes her face. Their foreheads touch. Adrian caresses his face and leans against him. They dance slowly to the music. Adrian lifts her head. Their mouths meet, and they kiss. Paul picks her up, and they twirl round and round. The couple are silhouetted against a window in the early morning light. He slowly unzips her dress and slips his hand beneath the fabric. She delicately unbuttons his shirt. Paul unties the belt around her waist. She pushes his shirt sleeves up. He slides his hand under her dress to caress her back. She lies in bed, gazing up at him as he gently makes love to her. They kiss and stroke each other's faces. Adrian gazes up at him. Paul pushes her hair back from her forehead. She closes her eyes. Morning. The sea sweeps majestically towards the inn. The couple are in bed, naked. Paul sits up with a map.
Okay, this is where I'll be flying into Esmeraldas.
He places the map on the bed.
And then take this long road. Because we're up into these mountains over here. That's where Mark's clinic is, on the south incline of these mountains. There's no phones, electricity, running water, nothing. Nothing, it's true. And then I take the, of course, the long road here up to that, which continues here and then up this very steep mountain.
For a shoulder.
Down this beautiful, beautiful, broad valley. And
her back.
Up this steep incline over here and around the river. And then, oh, and there's the post office. I'm going to be sending you letters from. There's another one.
He kisses and nuzzles her face. She's leaning on her elbows. He kisses her hands.
I don't know how long I'm going to be down there with Mark. Maybe a long time.
I know.
She touches his face and looks at him.
As long as it takes. It's the most important thing.
She kisses him. Adrian walks Paul to his car. He embraces and holds her as a blustery wind blows about them. He releases her and gets in his car. She smiles at him through the driver's window. She watches him drive away. Her mouth opens in surprise. Paul has stopped his car. He gets out and runs back to her. He picks her up and holds her tight. He sets her down and places several tender, passionate little kisses on her mouth. She responds. Their lips part, and she looks up at him, smiling. His eyes are closed. She kisses him again and smiles. He holds her hands, then cups her face. He gazes into her eyes, then gently touches her lips before stepping back. Brimming with emotion, Adrian holds a hand to her chest and smiles. Paul turns and runs to his car. Adrian places her hand over her mouth and walks away. Two parallel lines of huge timber stakes supporting the jetty stretch into the sea. Adrian, in blue jeans, a white shirt, and with a shawl wrapped around her shoulders, walks slowly, thoughtfully towards them. She passes beneath the huge timber stakes and out the other side. She sees a piece of driftwood lying on the beach and crouches down to examine it. She picks it up and runs her hands over it. She brushes some sand from it. Adrian's suburban home. Dark-haired goth Amanda sits anxiously in the sitting room. Danny's on a sofa. Jack storms out of a room.
Daddy!
He ignores her and leaves through the front door. Adrian comes into the sitting room.
Come here, baby. You'll see him in a bit. He wanted me to talk to you first.
Here comes the crap and the bullshit.
Please, just listen. Come here, honey.
What is there to listen to? Dad's gone.
Your father and I are not going to be together.
And what you mean by that is that Dad wanted to come back and you wouldn't let him.
He will always be your father. But I will not be his wife.
Okay. I know that he's not perfect, okay? Maybe he's not perfect, but you say that we don't have to be perfect.
Amanda,
so,
please.
Why can't you just forgive
that.
Him?
I forgive your father. It's not about the past.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
Amanda, please.
God, I hate you.
Stop
no,
it.
I really do hate
Stop
this.
Stop it, please.
Stop.
Yes, listen to me. Listen to me. I know that this is hard for you to understand. All I can tell you is that, listen, I'm still your mother. And I am not going anywhere, baby. I love you so much. No matter what. for my whole life. Do you understand? And that goes for your father, too. That goes for your father, too, Danny. But this was my decision. You have to trust that I made the right decision.
Amanda shrugs her mother's hands away and stomps off.
Amanda.
Adrian watches her head upstairs. She turns to Danny.
Come here, baby. It's gonna be okay. It's gonna be all right. It's all gonna be okay.
Adrian opens a door to a room that leads from the kitchen and steps down into near pitch black. She walks across the room and opens a Venetian blind. Light pours in. She pulls a cover from a large, smooth, polished wooden chest and opens it. She takes a neatly rolled cloth tool belt from a compartment and unfurls it on a bench. Inside several pockets are carving tools. She runs her fingers over them, then removes one from its pocket. She holds it up and feels its blunt end.
Hey, Mom! Watch this!
Danny tries to shoot a basket. Adrian collects her post.
Keep it up, honey!
She empties her post box and flicks through the post as she walks back through her garden. She stops in her tracks and gawps at an airmail envelope. It's from Paul. She rips it open.
Dear Adrian, saying goodbye to you is the hardest thing I've ever had to do. And I know I'll never do it again. But I'm going to look at our time apart as a chance to get to know you even better than I do.
At her workbench.
Dear Paul, after you left, I felt like I was waking up from a dream. I am a grown woman, for God's sake, not a teenager. I have a teenager. I kept thinking, was it the storm, the wine, the way you looked at me? I don't know how or why, but I'm old enough to know how lucky I am to have found you.
Adrian sets a plate and mug down and sits on a garden wall cross-legged to read a letter. Amanda arrives with friends.
Hi, Mrs. Willis.
Hey, girls.
Hi.
Ooh, that's a lot of stuff.
They troop inside.
Your mom's looking pretty good these days. Anyways.
It's so beautiful here. But believe me, nothing can compare to the peaks and valleys I traced along the map of your body.
Adrian glances over her shoulder.
Mark is really something. He never stops working. He's available to everybody all the time. I never thought I'd say this, but now I understand why he came.
Adrian planes wood.
Dear Paul, if Danny and Amanda were older, I'd be right there by your side. But as parents, this is one of the sacrifices we have to make. If I've gone this long without seeing you, talking to you, touching you, what's a few more months?
Listen, Tiger, it's not just that you got a hell of an arm, it's everything you are.
When Jack left me, it wasn't just our marriage ending. It was the loss of all the hopes that I'd had for the future.
Your compassion, generosity, the way you see beauty in simple things.
I tried to move on, but the world didn't seem that interested in me anymore.
Part of me wants to jump on a plane and come right back to you, but I know I can't.
Dear Paul, I can't believe it. Amanda is actually starting to come around.
First week here, I must have seen hundreds of patients.
I'm counting the days.
I never would have believed one weekend could change my whole life.
And then you came along and helped me believe in myself again.
She's making a small box. Jean sits in a chair on the beach with Adrian reading one of Paul's letters.
Who writes letters like this anymore?
I know.
Let me see that picture.
A photo.
Looks this good, appreciates you, and he has a dirty mind. Oh, yes, he's definitely a keeper.
They share wine in front of a small bonfire. Amanda flicks a desk lamp on over Adrian's workbench. She picks up a smoothly carved wooden lid with a little driftwood handle and looks at it. She uncovers a carved box, sets the lid on top, holds it up to study it, and smiles. Adrian sits on a garden bench.
Dear Adrian, when I write to you, I feel your breath. When you read these letters, I imagine you feel mine.
All right, guys, he's waiting.
She kisses her kids.
Our letters are a part of us now. Part of our history.
She sets a table for dinner.
A reminder that we made it through this time. Together.
Wait. No, Jack has the children until Monday.
Oh, she's on the phone.
Thank you. I'm making the exact same thing that we had together that night at the inn.
And a promise of what I hope our future will be.
I know. Jean. This flight's landing soon. I'm not even dressed. No, I'm gonna have to. I will, I promise.
course I will. I love you too, darling.
Love. Paul.
Dinner prepared, she hurries off. Dressed in a sleeveless red top that highlights her slim figure, Adrian sits in an armchair half in shadow. A candlelit table for two set with white lilies is behind her. She glumly picks up a phone and holds it in her lap.
Flight 2822. Arrived on time. Okay, well, I'm actually calling about a passenger. Yes, last name Flanner. Well, I want to know if he was on the plane. Of course, I understand you don't usually give out that information, but, of course. Well, do you have a supervisor that I could speak with, or? Well, what would you do in this situation? I mean, I just want this information, and I don't know who to ask.
Her profile is half in shadow.
I don't mind holding. I don't mind. Thank you.
She waits and listens. Adrian's asleep. She hurries downstairs and opens her front door to Paul's dark-haired son, Mark.
Hi. Adrian Willis?
Yes.
I'm Mark Flanner.
Adrian's eyes flicker for a moment. Then her face falls and her chest heaves. She shakes her head and glances at a box that Mark is holding. She's overcome with anxiety. Adrian and Mark sit facing each other in her sitting room. Their eyes are downcast. The box Mark brought sits on a table between them.
I'm still trying to work it out myself.
Flashes of Paul in Ecuador embracing his son. A truck full of people. Mark treats a patient.
As soon as he got there, he was different.
Mark looks up and sees his father step into dappled sunlight, smile and walk towards him. Mark steps down from the ramshackle, open-fronted wooden hospital and stares at him. Paul drops his holdall and embraces him warmly. Adrian smiles through tear-filled eyes.
I figured once there, he'd immediately start taking over like he usually did, but instead he just started working.
Mark watches his father surrounded by children, playfully get them to open their mouths so that he can check their throats. Rain teems down.
The conditions there were always tough, especially in the rainy season. I'd gotten word in the middle of the night that sections of the mountain were starting to give way.
We gotta get out of here! We gotta go now!
Not till we get the rest of the supplies!
I suppose if I hadn't been so determined to take everything with us.
It'll take 2 weeks. We'll lose too many people.
You gotta understand that in that part of the world, antibiotics and syringes are like gold.
All right, you load this stuff up. I'll go get the rest.
Okay.
As the rain pours down, Paul climbs the steps and enters the little forest hospital while Mark loads up a truck. Muddy black water gushes into the hospital, followed by a torrent of earth and water, which sends furniture toppling and bursts through the fragile walls. Trees come crashing down. Adrian shakes her head and weeps as she listens. The rain continues to pour down on the pitiful remains of the hospital. An iron bedstead pokes out of the dark mud. Adrian raises her head to look at Mark.
Just as we were starting to know each other again, he was taken away from me.
Her eyes well with tears.
Because of you, he was a changed man. You gave me back my father.
He looks at her and nods.
You saved him.
He gives her a faint smile. Adrian quietly weeps, then shakes her head and looks up.
Saved each other.
She nods. Adrian stands in the doorway and watches Mark walk away down the garden path. A taxi waits on the other side of a white picket fence. Adrian slowly closes the door. In her sitting room, she sits with a box which is metal resting on her knees. She unbuckles a strap around it, carefully lifts the lid off, and places it on the table. Adrian leans back in the armchair and looks down at the contents of the box. The well-thumbed medical Spanish textbook, a map, letters. She exhales. Her chest convulses a little, then she tilts her head and reaches into the box. She takes out Paul's sunglasses and clutches them to her. Her beautiful face is racked with anguish. She picks up the medical Spanish book and holds it close. She picks up a bundle of envelopes that are tied in a ribbon. Tears stream down her face as she flicks through them. They are her letters to Paul. She closes her eyes. She looks into the box again and sees an unposted airmail envelope. She picks it up. Shocked, she sees that it's addressed to her from Paul. She turns it round. It hasn't been sealed. She quickly takes out its letter, unfolds it, and reads. As her eyes quickly scan the page, her brow is deeply furrowed, her expression grief-stricken. Her face twists with barely contained distress. Her hands shake. Her head lolls back. She holds a hand to her face. She strokes her hair and looks at the letter. She shakes her head and holds the letter to her breast. She picks up all the letters, the medical Spanish book, the sunglasses, and clutches them to her tightly as she sobs. She shakes her head. Amanda and Danny are dropped back home.
Bye, Dad.
Goodbye, I love you guys.
I love you. I miss you.
Danny runs to the house. Inside. Amanda goes into the kitchen and sees Adrian.
Hey, Mom! Mom, guess what? Mom.
Danny stares at his mother.
Mom?
Okay, Danny, I need you to go upstairs.
But what's wrong with Mom?
Danny, just please do it, okay? Just go upstairs, okay? Please.
Danny goes. Adrian is sitting listlessly, with her bare legs resting on the dining table.
Mom?
Amanda steps tentatively towards her. Adrian, who wears a white vest top, doesn't move.
Mama?
Adrian's arms are folded across her chest. Amanda fidgets nervously.
Dear Adrian, in a few days we'll be together again. I can't wait to meet Danny and Amanda, walk on our beach, and spend another night in the blue room with you in my arms.
Adrian lies face down on a sofa.
But most of all, I can't wait for our life to begin together. Thank you for showing me that it wasn't too late. All I can do to repay you is promise to love you forever. And I do.
Amanda covers her with a blanket.
Come on, Danny, let's go. School bus is almost here.
Danny finishes breakfast.
And the boss of me since
right now. Well, let's go.
Okay.
Come on.
Go.
She pushes him out the door, then gathers up his breakfast dishes. Adrian lies on her side in bed. Lying beside her, Amanda leans on an elbow and watches her mother anxiously. She checks to see if Adrian is asleep, then switches off the bedside lamp. Amanda looks at her mother tenderly, then cuddles up beside her and puts her arm around her. Adrian sits on a wicker sofa on her veranda, gazing out over the garden. Amanda brings her a coffee and sits down beside her. Adrian, looking tired and worn, turns to her.
Thank you. Look,
She touches her face with a tissue.
I've been wanting to explain to you, but I don't think...
You don't think that I can handle it. Because in your mind, I'm still just a little girl. But I'm not. You're a man, I know stuff.
Amanda's eyes brim with tears.
Like what happened with you and Dad. He told me about how he hurt you.
Adrian sighs, then looks up at her daughter.
And all that time that I was so mean to you.
Her face crumples.
I'm really sorry. But I do know what happens. I do. So you can tell me.
Okay. While your father and I were apart, I met a man. I know you've only ever known your father and me. And I love Jack because he's your father. But there's another kind of love, Amanda. One that gives you the courage to be better than you are, not less than you are. One that makes you feel that anything is possible. I want you to know that you can have that. I want you to hold out for it. I want you to know that you deserve it. You hear me?
She strokes Amanda's cheek and rests her hand on her shoulder. Adrian looks down and sobs. Amanda's face is wet with tears.
Tell me about him.
Adrian looks at her, and Amanda nods. Adrian reaches over the side of the sofa and picks up the box she carved from driftwood. She places it on her lap.
You made this for him?
I was going to give it to him.
She takes out a photo of Paul in Ecuador. He's smiling and has his arm around a little local girl. She hands it to Amanda and smiles. Adrian reaches over the side of the sofa again and takes a letter from the metal box. She hands the letter to Amanda. The inn at Rodanthe is silhouetted against a rain-filled evening sky. The whites of the waves sparkle in the dark grey sea. Jean holds Adrian's hand as they sit on her veranda, gazing out over the ocean. The weather vane rotates in the wind. Adrian, dressed in black, sits at the edge of the bed in the blue bedroom. The driftwood box intended for Paul rests on the marble-topped bedside table. She strokes the bed, and memories of her time with Paul are evoked. She dances with him on the jetty after the beach party. They lie in bed illuminated by bright morning light. She smiles as Paul kisses and nuzzles her face, their last tight embrace before he leaves. Day. Wild waves crash to the shore. Adrian, in blue jeans, boots and a white V-neck sweater, walks along the beach with her hands in her pockets. Deep in thought, she bites her lip. She looks ahead and stops. Her mouth opens and she stares in disbelief. She brings her hands to her face. She crouches down as a herd of wild horses, the bankers of Rodanthe, gallop across the beach towards her. The horses, free and wild, some chestnut, others bay, white and piebald, gallop past her with abandon. Adrian holds her hand to her mouth with utter astonishment. Adrian's on her knees in the sand. She throws her head back and sobs with laughter. Adrian, Jean, Amanda and Danny walk out along the wooden jetty with their arms around each other. Adrian strokes Amanda's hair and kisses Danny on the top of the head, then steps in front of them and walks alone to the end of the jetty. The others stand and watch her. Adrian, her white dress fluttering in the wind, smiles as she looks out over the ocean. She kisses her palms and tosses her kiss out to sea. ITFC audio description by Aileen Downey.
I remember those nights down in Redentor.
Executive producers Doug Claiborne, Alison Greenspan, Dana Goldberg, and Bruce Berman. Director of Photography, Alfonso Beato, ASC. Production designer, Patricia von Brandenstein. Edited by Brian A. Cates, ACE. Music by Janine Tazori. Costumes designed by Victoria Farrell. Casting by Lynn Kressel, CSA. Cast: Paul, Richard Gere, Adrian, Diane Lane, Jack, Christopher Maloney, Jean, Viola Davis, Dot, Becky Ann Baker, Robert Torrelson, Scott Glenn, Jill Torrelson, Linda Malloy, Charlie Torrelson, Pablo Schreiber, Amanda Mae Whitman, Danny, Charlie Tahan, Jenny, Carolyn McCormick, Old Gus, Ted Manson, Jean's Lover, Atto Asando, Medical Resident, Terry Denise Johnson, Admiring Nurse, Jessica Lucas, Ecuadorian Patient, Maricela Ramirez, Pregnant Woman, Kimberly Sauls, Real Estate Woman, Irene Ziegler, Bus Passenger, Dehidri Aguilar, Fisherman, William D. Hopper, Ferry Boat Captain, Howell Scarborough, Ferry Women, Candy Dennis, Casey Lane, Chucky Ramsey, Betsy Duke, Stunt Coordinator, John Copeman. Songs: Every Direction, performed by Vivisect. Way Down in North Carolina, performed by Lauren Pritchard. Jive at Five, performed by Count Basie and his orchestra. Mama, He Treats Your Daughter Mean, performed by Ruth Brown. Swingin' in the Key of C, performed by Slim and Slam. Motown Swing, performed by Count Basie. Backwater Blues, performed by Dinah Washington. Money, performed by Dirty Children. Bach Goldberg Variation, performed by Glenn Gould. Every moment of my life, I'll think. Like a Hurricane, performed by the Dillards. A Rockin' Good Way to Mess Around and Fall in Love, performed by Dinah Washington and Brooke Benton. Come Around to My House, Mama, performed by Katie Mitchell, Luke Castro, Marcy Brenner, Kevin Hardy, Jubal Creech, and Bob Zentz. Before I Met You, performed by Jewel Garish, Bob Zentz, Gianne McDougall, Kevin Hardy, Jubal Creech, and Herb Price. In Rodanthe, performed by Emmylou Harris. This motion picture, copyright 2008, Warner Brothers Entertainment, Inc., US, Canada, Bahamas, and Bermuda. Copyright 2008, Village Roadshow Films, BVI Limited, all other territories. Screenplay, copyright 2008, Warner Brothers Entertainment, Inc., US, Canada, Bahamas, and Bermuda. Copyright 2008, Village Roadshow Films, BVI Limited, all other territories. Original score, copyright 2008, Warner Olive Music, LLC. Distributed by Warner Brothers Pictures, a Time Warner company.